Welcome. You're listening to Latin Waves with your hosts, Sylvia and Stuart Richardson. Latin Waves is more than just hot rhythms. This is a show about community, about creating a culture that is inclusive and based on fairness. Because everyone deserves dignity, respect, and has something to contribute. A new world is possible, and it all starts with us.
Overall, poverty and problems in the world have been getting worse and worse. Global neoliberal capitalism has increased global poverty, and it is on the verge of triggering a climate crisis from which it would be very, very difficult for the planet to recover.
That's the voice of activist, author, and academic Robin Hanel. On this week's show, we speak to Robin about the recent loss of the progressive left in Venezuela and what lessons can be learned for progressives globally. Stay tuned.
We are live with Dr. Robin Hanel. We're very privileged to have you on our program today. We've been looking at the election results, and Venezuela, for many Latin Americans, has signaled a lighthouse in many ways, you know, the kind of model that many Latin American people would like to pursue in terms of creating a new world where equality is not something that is of a utopia, but rather the reality. How do we read these results and what can we learn from them?
It was certainly a discouraging electoral result. As you know, these were parliamentary elections. This was not for the president. Chavez's successor, Maduro, who's the leader of the Venezuelan Socialist Party, is still president. But the opposition, and this is a very determined, and I would argue by international standards, particularly reactionary and conservative opposition in Venezuela, did very, very well in the elections. And this is a huge change because, contrary to U.S. propaganda that we even have people like Vice President Biden, you know, Biden, who referred to Chavez as a dictator, the Venezuelan dictator. Chavez had won election after election. They had put constitutional reform to the ballot. They had won referendum. He had won election and reelection. So this was the first time that a majority of the population had not voted in favor of the Venezuelan Socialist Party. So in that sense, it is a big setback. It's not the end by any means, but it is a setback, and I think it's time, you know, and people ever since then have been trying to figure out, why did this happen? What went wrong? What do we need to do differently?
Well, one of the things we learn is that social movements have, you know, throughout history, ebb and flows. And when we look at Venezuela, we see the influence that this has had perhaps on the Podemos in Spain, Syriza in Greece. How does this now affect perhaps our ideals for a more socialist world? And moving forward, what can we do to maintain and sustain that momentum?
I think you've actually, you know, put your finger on it. What we have gotten used to is ebbs and flows, where things get bad when, you know, conservative or moderate governments are governing. People get fed up, and then more progressive forces are voted in. And our various social movements that are fighting and organizing all the time, you know, play a major role in electoral victories for progressive forces. We're not satisfied. Our goal is not to have ebbs and flows. For instance, our goal is not to have, well, we vote in a progressive government, and then after a while we vote them out and we vote back in a conservative government. I mean, that is not what thinking progressives and socialists historically, you know, have envisioned as what we're about. To say that we understand, believe in, and fully support democratic rule and the right of people to vote socialist governments out of power if they want to doesn't mean that we want to be voted out of power. And I think that's something that the international left has failed to come to grips with. We came to grips with one thing, which is, oh, once we are in power, we're not going to let elections throw us out of power. I think that was a terrible mistake. I think that a lot of leftists believe that. A lot of leftist governments tried to behave that way in the past, and I'm very happy that we have jettisoned that. But I think we have lapsed into sort of accepting, well, we'll come to power and we'll try some things, and then after a while, the other guys will come in and replace us and undo a lot of the reforms that we did. That's not our goal either. So the question is, in the case of Venezuela, you know, progressives have been in power for 17 years. And the question is, well, why did they get voted out now? What did they not do, or what did they do that led a majority of the population to decide that they look like they would rather trust, at least in the parliamentary elections, a very conservative, you know, opposition that really is the old oligarchy? So what did we do wrong is the question that we're asking. And I think there's a lot of answers to it, and people have talked very sensibly about a lot of things. I think there's one thing that people have not really focused on, and that is whether in Venezuela, or whether it's the Syriza government in Greece, or whether it's Podemos in Spain, whether or not the lack of a clear idea of what kind of society are you trying to build, and how are you going to actually accomplish it. We're very good at saying, oh, we want a more democratic society. We want everything to be more democratic. We want everything to be more equal and more egalitarian. We want more economic justice. We want to protect the environment. And we know a lot about how you can reform private enterprise market systems to move things in that way. But what we no longer seem to have a grip on is what kind of new system do we believe in putting in place that would not leave us open to the power of capitalists to convince people that things aren't working well, now you need us to come back and let us put things in order. So that's the part that I think is most difficult for leftists and progressives to confront. In Venezuela, we can talk about the tremendous drop in oil prices. So it's not just Venezuela. Any incumbent government in a state that is producing a major exporter of oil has got major problems, you know, when oil prices drop that much. Whether you're a socialist government, a capitalist government, whether it's a developed economy or an underdeveloped economy, that clearly is going to make a government that's in power, you know, less popular. You're going to have less wherewithal to sort of to spend on the programs that you are trying to implement. And they had a tremendous, I mean, they really did, you know, badly mismanage the foreign exchange crisis and turned it into a rampant inflation. And I think that was just economic incompetence. But I think that the deeper message is they tried to build a new kind of economy. They called it the social economy. They founded the co-ops. They did the misiones. They did the subsidized food stores. They did the clinics in the poor neighborhoods. They even launched communal councils, a whole new form of direct, you know, grassroots self-managing government. But they put these pieces together, and they never figured out a way to build them into a system that they had enough confidence in so that they would then say, now we have popular support and we know how to replace the entire capitalist sector, and that takes care of the capitalists, and to replace the old state sector that was really being run in a very hierarchical way. So they built a new kind of economy, but they never consolidated it and advanced so that that new kind of economy replaced the two old economies, the private sector that the oligarchy was in charge of, and the state sector that was not certainly a model of how socialism should be self-managed and self-governed. And I sense that's a failure of the left everywhere. As the old models of Soviet central planning or Chinese Maoism have gone into the dustbins of history, we haven't really consolidated and figured out exactly what is this new system and how's it going to work and how do you put it together. And I think that is partly responsible for why it is after 17 years in power that the Socialist Party is, you know, it lost its parliamentary majority and and is in danger of losing the next presidential election, I fear.
Well, you know, one of the things that you say is that in order for us to know what kind of system we want to put in place, we would also have to take into account that we don't live in isolation. I mean, Venezuela, it's an example for many Latin American countries, but it's still a country among a world of many countries. And in the last 30 years of neoliberalism, there has been a lot of pressure. And so just like a crisis has provided an opportunity for this whole big emergency push towards international taxation and kind of erosion of social wins, you know, not just in the Western world, but throughout. So it's, for me, I think it's really easy to look from an observant side, you know, seat and say they should have done this. But the reality is, how can we navigate that, knowing the history of invasions, knowing the history of economic boycotts and economic terrorism that had plagued not just the Bolivarian Revolution, but every revolution throughout the Americas that has threatened to throw away the capitalist system?
You're absolutely right. Building a socialist Venezuela was swimming against the current of U.S. imperialism still dominating the Western Hemisphere and a global capitalist system that is hostile as it can be to, you know, any country and people who's try to build a different kind of economic system, a socialist system. That's one of the obstacles. So, and in this particular case, we know that the U.S. government tried to overthrow Chavez twice and came very close to doing it. We know that the CIA has done everything they can to help the opposition. We know that the opposition has literally sabotaged the Venezuelan economy. I mean, they have done like what the Republicans have done during the Obama administration. These people, they have no loyalty to their citizenry in their country. They essentially were engaging in scorched earth politics of doing everything they can to gum up the works and make nothing work well until people finally would vote out, you know, the socialist government in Venezuela. All these things are difficult external circumstances. And one can only fight against them and be prepared that sometimes you're overcome. But focusing on those things is really focusing on things that we can't do a hell of a lot about. By focusing on, well, was the U.S., you know, partly responsible for making it difficult for socialist reforms in Venezuela? Well, of course it was. But there's not much that socialists in Venezuela can do about that. And is the internal opposition sabotaging? Yes, they are. Well, the way you stop them from sabotaging is take their power away. If they didn't have a private sector that was in their hands, they wouldn't have the power. Well, to do that, you have to have an alternative plan about how you run the sections of the economy that they used to run. So I think it is important for us to speak truth to ourselves about the issues that we can do something about. Sometimes you lose because you did the best you could, and opposition forces were overwhelming. But sometimes you also lose because you didn't do the best you could. And it's focusing on how can we do better that I think is the more productive thing. And the thing that I believe that leftists in Venezuela should be asking themselves is, was it a failure to stop the progress? We essentially stopped progressing and building the social economy. We did certain things and then we stopped. And really, there's been no forward momentum for the social economy in Venezuela for the past 3 or 4 years. I do think that played a significant role in empowering the opposition and disempowering the social movements and the forces that were arguing for a new society in Venezuela. I'm not saying it's easy. I'm not saying it's easy to figure out how to run the economy, you know, in a way that is both effective and is an economy of equitable cooperation, not competition and greed. And I also believe that you have to start with these elements and you learn as you go along what works and what doesn't work and what you have to add, because you can't keep the thing you started going and make it grow unless you add something additional. And I think they did all that brilliantly in Venezuela, but they did it early, and it slowed down. And when you slow down and you leave the opposition in a position where they still control a major part of the economy, you have to keep moving forward. You can't sort of stand still. Stand still turns into moving backwards. And I think this last election was evidence of a moving backwards, a political moving backwards in Venezuela. As much as it saddens me to say this, and Sylvia, you know that I spent, I was down there three different times working as a consultant for the, you know, for the Venezuelan government on exactly these projects. How do you build 21st century socialism? How are we going to do it and make it better and stronger than any socialism ever was? How are we going to avoid committing the errors of the past? How are we going to, I've worked with people down there, and I know that, and people down there have been doing everything they could, and they've tried their hardest. It wasn't good enough yet, and we have to keep thinking about how to do things better.
Now, we have learned many lessons, and I think we're constantly learning the lessons. As you say, one of them is to show up and truly be honest with ourselves when we haven't done, you know, our very best, when we have become complacent, perhaps. So if you were meeting with President Maduro today, what advice would you offer to him and his cabinet as they are trying to win back the confidence of the Venezuelan people? And what advice would you give to the people on the streets who are trying to, hold back the dams, right, that are breaking, where many of the changes that have been made are being threatened to be eroded?
Well, I'm sure that one thing that Maduro is doing, and I think that this is important, he's trying to remind people, if you let the oligarchs back in control in Venezuela, it'll be worse than it ever was, and there will be retribution that will be visited against everybody who is a political activist and building and in favor of the kinds of programs that have come in place for the last 17 years. And the lives of the majority of Venezuelans have been improved dramatically over the last 17 years. So he's going to remind people of that. If you open the gates and let the enemy back in, it is going to be hell to pay, you know, for ordinary people and for leftists and for everybody who's been a progressive activist. I think you have to offer more than that. I would advise him, you need to move the social economy forward. You need to say, we started building something good. We made a mistake. We slowed down. And instead of slowing down, as president, I am now going to do everything within my power to speed up the transformation process. And that transformation process basically includes, how do you integrate in a democratic planning process all of these elements of the social economy? You need to replace the markets, which is how they relate now, and you need to do it with a kind of planning that is not authoritarian and bureaucratic. And I think that's what they have to do, and that's what I would be urging him to launch, a program that tries to move Venezuela in that direction. Because then you are building a positive alternative and moving it forward and reminding people that that's what they have a chance to choose for and vote for, a growing social economy that's better serving people, rather than going back to a capitalist restoration, which is clearly what the opposition has in mind. Here, I will put it this way. When 17 years ago, when Chavez came to power, he was very clear about some things. He was very clear that he believed in democracy, political democracy, that he was going to run in elections, and if he managed to convince the majority to vote for him and vote for the Socialist Party, then they were going to rule and they were going to do their best. They weren't going to, now we're in power and there's no more elections. And they were very clear they didn't want capitalism. They certainly didn't want neoliberal capitalism. And they were very clear that they didn't want state planning, sort of Cuban or Soviet-style socialism. They weren't clear about exactly what they wanted instead. They didn't want neoliberal capitalism. They didn't want state socialism. They wanted to go beyond sort of traditional liberal social democracy, but they didn't know exactly what that was. The sad thing is, I think 17 years later, they were no more clear about what they really wanted than they had been 17 years earlier. And that's what I mean when I say there's a lack of clarity about what is this system that we want people to help us build with them. Exactly what does it work and how does it work? You have to have a plan. And I think that they had elements of a plan, and they put together good projects and good initiatives, but they didn't have an overall plan and strategy for how was this all supposed to fit together and become 21st century socialism. It's not easy. None of us have figured that out. But I do think until we do, that we run the risk of having these things happen over and over again, like what's just happened in Venezuela, and frankly, what's just happened in Greece.
We're coming to the end of our interview, you know, and I was thinking as we close, I'd like to point out that as we begin a new year, 2016, it's reflective of the myriad multifaceted crisis that we face. Not only do we want a planet with, you know, we can reduce the growing poverty and inequality that we see. We also notice that, you know, the shrinking access to a livable way of life with dignity. So in your book, Of the People, By the People, The Case for a Participatory Economy, you give not just a pathway, but also, I think, a call to action. What would you say to those who want that world today? What is the significance of a global convergence of workers around the world? Because I think Venezuela is important not just for the Venezuelans, but it's important for all of us worldwide who care about justice.
Venezuela was an incredibly important thing for all of us. And it still is. I don't mean I'm not washing my hands of Venezuela and saying it's done. It's over. The counter-revolution is won. That is not the case. That is clearly not the case, as much as the U.S. press would like you to believe that, as much as the opposition in Venezuela would like, you know, Venezuelans to believe that. That's not the case. Overall, poverty and problems in the world have been getting worse and worse. Global neoliberal capitalism has increased global poverty, and it is on the verge of triggering a climate crisis from which it would be very, very difficult for the planet to recover. Latin America, for the past 17 years, Venezuela being the most shining example, is the region of the world that was most different from that, that was moving forward rather than backwards. And in that sense, it was an incredible example to all of us. In Europe, the Syriza government was an incredible example to people in Spain and Portugal and Ireland and Italy that austerity and neoliberal austerity and rule by the banks is not good, and you can stand up to it. You can stand up to it and win elections. You can stand up to it and win a referendum, 61% saying no, no more to austerity. So both of these places, we've had very, very positive examples that are very, very important for all of us, every place in the world who are trying to fight to turn the juggernaut around, to stop this neoliberal trend, global trend, and to do something about climate change before it's too late, and to do it fairly, by the way. But it's important for us to look and see. We've seen setbacks in both places that were our most shining examples of progress, moving in the right direction. And it's incredibly important to be self-reflective about what must we think hard about doing differently when those situations arise.
Thank you so much for being with us today. That was Dr. Robin Hanel. He's the author of the People, By the People, The Case for a Participatory Economy. And we reached him in the U.S. Thank you very much for joining us today.
A heartfelt thank you to all our listeners, and a big thank you to all the stations who are carrying Latin Waves, and for those who download it from the website at latinwavesmedia.com. I'm going to finish the show with a song called Mad World, so stay tuned.
On New Year's Day, officers positioned Grant face first on the floor with one officer near his head, a second near his back, and a third officer standing nearby.
But we also want to warn viewers who may find the video disturbing to watch and may want to turn away.
All around me are familiar faces. Whoa. filling up their glasses. No expression, no expression. Hide my head, I wanna drown my sorrow. No tomorrow, no tomorrow. Feels like all we know is money. I find it kinda sad. Conditions we are living, yeah, the poverty is bad. I find it hard to tell you, I find it hard to take. When people wanna hurt you, it's a very, very
everybody's back. Children on the block, papa working at angle. Mama doing a lot, but economy's in a tank. Where's the peace and equality? Are we going insane? Can we stop the brutality? People looking for change. Haters looking for blame. Sanity's looking insane. There's no hope for humanity. Let's the planet's humane.
We've come to the end of our show, Latin Waves. Latin Waves is an internationally syndicated weekly program made available through campus and community stations and available out to the world at www.latinwavesmedia.com. Visit Latin Waves Media to hear previous shows, to access resources, or support our efforts towards social change via community project engagement. Thank you and bye for now.